Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. This is Abby, and today's episode is going to be so informative. Lori and I sat down with Darius Namdaran, all the way from Scotland, to talk about his experience with dyslexia and how he has used it to his advantage and has made a career out of it. He had so much incredible information to share that we decided to split his interview into two episodes. So enjoy part one of our conversation with Darius Namdaran.
Hey, everybody, this is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Today, we have a very special guest. Darius, welcome to our podcast. Darius, today, tell us where you're coming from, Darius.
I'm in Scotland.
In Scotland. So he's going to talk to us today. He has got some fascinating information to share with us today about dyslexia. How it impacts students with their reading and their writing, and also how it impacts adults. So do you mind just starting out telling us a little bit about you and kind of what got you into the world of dyslexia?
Yes. So I have dyslexia, and like many people my age, it was my teenage daughter that made me realize the pain that children experience with dyslexia at school. Especially in the area of organization skills and organizing their ideas and study skills and so on. I think often as adults, we kind of block out that pain of childhood and school and so on that I experienced. And then when you start seeing it happen in your child's life, it just kind of wakes you up and realizes, oh my goodness, they need help. And that's kind of what woke me up. I used to be, I am an avid mind mapper, which is, if anyone knows, it's like visual organizer, like bubble diagrams, spider diagrams, webbing. These are all different phrases that people are using for mind mapping, because the word mind maps was trademarked by Tony Buzan, who invented it 35 years ago. Oh. So people use other variations of it so they don't infringe that. I used it to get through my law degree at Edinburgh Law School. And my daughter woke up to the fact that she was getting D's in biology when she was the straight A ducks of the school. Ducks, do you have the same term in America? Ducks, you know, the top? No, basically the top student of the school is called a ducks. Okay. In the UK. It comes from Cambridge and Oxford. And that's when she said, okay, Dad, teach me your techniques, you know. And I then realized how hard it was to teach a child with dyslexia how to mind map. I just couldn't believe it. You know, I really couldn't believe it. I thought it would take an afternoon or a weekend. But
why do you think it's harder? Why do you think it's harder for a student with dyslexia?
Well, that's over the last 4 or 5 years, it's just been a journey of discovery when I actually turned it into a business to teach children how to do this. I think it's because children with dyslexia have like zero gravity brains. It's like their thoughts in their mind are like floating all the time, and they're not sitting neatly on their work table or desk. I call it like a zero gravity workshop compared to a gravity workshop. My wife's got a workshop where all her thoughts sit neatly on a desk. When she walks out the room, comes back in, all her thoughts are still where she left them. For me, they're floating and bouncing around the ceiling. And for my daughter, it's the same. And so we have to constantly capture those thoughts and set them down on the table and reorganize them. So when you ask a child to do a brainstorm of a mind map and get all their thoughts down, it's just basically like a picture of that random chaos in their mind. And they look at it and they go, yuck, I don't like that. That makes me feel bad. It's all horrible and chaotic. And they want to get away from the chaos of their mind. And right. We, in a very well-meaning way, try and bring order with a visual organizer, but it's either too much order, too linear an order in lots of boxes and so on with these visual organizers in inverted commas, or it's this chaotic, random spider diagramming. And there isn't anywhere in between that actually takes that chaos and brings a creative order to it. So that's become my mission over the last 5 years, is to find a way of mind mapping that teaches dyslexic kids how to go from chaos to creative order and then make it productive.
Hmm. How did you first get introduced to mind mapping? Like, where, how did you find that? And how did it become the way that you worked?
Well, it was funny because my geography teacher, when I was 14 years old and I was in the bottom class, so in Scotland, you get streamed into 5 different classes in private schools, and I was in the bottom class. That's the no-hopers and the troublemakers. And oh, no. And I was a no-hoper, basically. And my geography teacher said, Nom Duron, come up to the front at the end of the class. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to be in trouble because I spent all the lesson talking to the bad boys. And he said...
And had you already been diagnosed with dyslexia at the time?
Oh, no. I didn't find out I was dyslexic until I was 35, until, you know, all of this is over, you know?
Okay.
So, you know, one of the wonderful things about dyslexic individuals is that and ADHD is that we start finding lots of workarounds in an unconscious, pretty random way. It's a bit unfortunate because it can take you 2, 3, 4, 5 years to find a workaround that you can learn in a month, you know. But, you know, we get there. We're slowly, eventually. Anyway, so this geography teacher said, Nom Duron, I think you're smart. I think you could pass this exam. And I'm like, well, thank you, but I don't see how. And he said, you need to read this book called Use Your Head by Tony Buzan. And it was all the rage. Anyway, Tony Buzan simplified all sorts of things like the Pomodoro technique and spaced repetition and all of these important techniques on how to study. And one of them was this mind mapping thing. And it was too complicated for me, seeing all those spider webs and stuff like that. So I left it until 6 years later when I crashed and burned in the third year honors of law school. And I went back to law school and said, I want to finish, but I need better techniques. And that's when I sat down with this book and said, I'm going to learn how to study. And I learned from his book, How to Mind Map. And that was the first time I actually sat down and really enjoyed learning a subject completely, not just tactically learn the 3 main topics that they'll ask in the exam and try and avoid 4 or 5 of them to lighten the load, et cetera, and playing Russian roulette with what you're going to decide, because I'd done that all the way up to law school. And by the time you're in third year in law school, you actually have to know your subject, all of it.
Right.
And so I failed. And that's when I decided, no, I've got to find a way to actually learn stuff and enjoy it. And that's when I learned how to mind map. I'm self-taught.
So you went from the bottom class, the bottom, to law school.
Yes, actually, I was 14 years old. And by the time I was 16, I was in the top of every class. And I'd got some of the highest grade in the whole country within 2 years.
Wow. And what do you attribute that success to?
Oh, I would love to attribute it to my intelligence, but it's not. It's actually, I played Russian roulette with what questions I had to answer in the exams. So what I did was I went through all the exam papers going back 15 years and mathematically calculated what the probabilities were of what questions would turn up. And I just studied those questions plus or minus 1 or 2. And my calculations were right all the way up until third year of law school, where you can't play that game anymore.
Darius, I hate to break it to you, but that sounds like that was due to your intelligence, because that's really brilliant. I mean, what a great idea.
What a great strategy.
I think that shows, too, that dyslexic things. They think so different. You know, they think outside the box. They look at things from different angles, and you took that. And yeah, that's crazy. So,
well, that's my whole approach with Bullet Map Academy, because it's like, hey, guys, look, let's learn how to play the game. Let's learn the rules of the game and let's learn how to play within the rules of the game. Because what I've noticed with a lot of people with dyslexia, it's kind of like if you can imagine a football field, okay? And, you know, it's like a test is the teacher saying to you, I want you to take this ball and run to the end of the pitch and put it through those sticks over there, okay? And whether it's soccer or whatever, let's take soccer. We play soccer here and you play soccer over there. You kick the ball and you get it into that net and then you're done, okay? The only thing is that sometimes people with dyslexia often get into their heads. They think, oh, this is to show how good I am at running or how good I am at dribbling or how good I... And they're off the pitch and they've run 2 miles and they've shown that they've run around all the circles and then they get close to the net and they get across the line and the teacher goes, sorry, I can't give you a mark. And you're like, why? I did all these amazing things. See how good I am. And he says, you didn't get it in the net. All I want you to do is to walk up the pitch and kick it in the net, and then we'll go on to the next thing. And they're like, really? Is that all you want? And so they expand the scope because they think they're constantly hungering for the bigger picture, the bigger meaning, the bigger context, how things all interrelate. And often some of these kids, like my geography teacher when I was 14, he was saying, what's the problem here, Nom Duran? And I said, well, you know, I really am trying to learn everything. And he says, so give me an example. And I said, well, physics, I'm trying to figure out what the substance of gravity is. And I can't figure out what the substance of gravity is. And he says, Darius, no one in the world has figured that out yet, you know? And we don't start asking that question until you're at university. Right now, you just need to say that gravity is 10 newtons and you're okay. And I'm like, really? Is that all? And he said, and I said, so what do I do for geography? And he says, look, Darius, I'll tell you how it works for geography. Here's how it works. Do you want a B? And I said, love a B. And he says, this is how you get a B, right? Last week, I told you some stuff about geography, and this week, I've got a little test, okay? All I want you to do is tell me what I told you last week. Can you do that? I'm like, well, I don't kind of need to explain it or anything like that. I says, no, don't go into all the explanations. That's your problem, Darius. And just tell me what I told you. And I said, seriously, is that it? And you'll get a B. And I'll get a B? Yeah, okay. And he says, would you like an A? And I said, I'd love an A. And he says, well, what you do is if you think of something that connects to something else I taught you, not something else you've learned on the side, but something else I've taught you in the curriculum, I'll give you an A as well. And I was like, fine. Within 6 months, I was getting A's. I was in the top of the sets. And my mum had to fight to do 6 hires. I mean, in Scotland, we do 5 hires, which is 5 really tough exams, but I did 6. And they're like, how can he? He's, you know, this is Nom Duran. And I was like, well, my mum is my advocate. You know, I couldn't have been here without my mum. That's the bottom line. No one with dyslexia can get anywhere really without a really good mum. Sorry, dads, but it really does come down to mums. Forgive me. But,
no, I agree.
You know, there are exceptions and dads really need to be in the picture too. But it's often the tenacity of mums, like my mum saying to me, Darius, you are really clever. When every single other person and organization and lesson was saying I was dumb.
Mm-hmm. Was your mom
around fighting for you?
Was she around when you had your diagnosis, when you were diagnosed with dyslexia?
When I was 35, yeah. Yeah.
So did that sort of give her a little bit of like, see, you're smart. It's just, I feel like that would have given her so much joy to find that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was quite, I don't know if it really did that for her. It did it for me. It was funny. I'll tell you about my mom, right? I'm 51 years old. Okay. And 2 months ago, I was sitting in the semi-finals of the EdTech Championships in the UK, the World EdTech Competition. And we had the UK semi-finals. And I was presenting Bullet Map Academy because we're an EdTech company. And I presented it in the 3 minutes. And there was other companies that were earning like $20 million a year, had huge technology budgets, had lots of research behind them, whatever. And we're tiddlers compared to them, but we were joint equal if they could have. We came second up, runner up. And my mom said after that, she said, you know, I knew eventually you would What did she say? I knew eventually you would find your thing or something like that. Or I knew eventually you would be successful. I'm not successful yet. But it was like it's an ADHD thing as well. I've got ADHD as well. I'm self-diagnosed. I'm diagnosed with dyslexia, but self-identified with ADHD over the last year or so. So you kind of go from one thing to another and not all become a jack of all trades, and sometimes don't always become an expert of one. And I suppose in the last 5 years, I've started to become the expert of one.
I think you found your passion though. And I think that's part of that ADHD brain is when you find the thing that you're passionate about, you kind of dive all in.
Yeah. I think that's really important for dyslexia. Often I heard this talk where a guy said, you know, often people are wanting you to find what you're meant to be doing in life or why you're meant to be doing it. But actually the secret is to find your who. Who are you living for? And once you find who you're living for, who you're working for, all the whys and whats come into place. And my who is people with dyslexia.
That was awesome.
That's great. I love that.
Go ahead, Abby.
I was going to say, so do you work with individuals with dyslexia of all ages, or what's in your wheelhouse, or what's your target age group for your
program? It's been really strange over the last 7 years as I've kind of developed this, and then more formally in the last five. I started off wanting to teach entrepreneurs visual organizing skills with dyslexia, because often entrepreneurs really need to organize their ideas visually to figure out how to stay focused and on track. Then I thought to myself, my goodness, yes, okay, these guys will pay £1,000 to £2,000 to £3,000 a day for training, etc., in a group or for a CEO suite, a C-suite or whatever. But actually, what if I could train them when they were 14, before they went through all that grief? That would be so much better. And so I decided, could I teach 14-year-olds my university technique for going through exams? And so I did it with them, a pilot group, and they just thrived. Over 3 months, they were all acing their exams and just doing so well from failing. Within just weeks, it was just mind-boggling what happens when they engage their visual skills. So that worked well. And then I started telling people about it, and people came and did it. And then mothers would come to me and said, look, could my 8-year-old do this? And I said, I have no idea if your 8-year-old could do it. This is like for examination students, a course and groups to discuss it and so on. I said, well, try it. And, we'll just do a trial and try it. 8-year-olds were doing it and getting it. And they were getting it faster than the 14-year-olds and the adults. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. And the parents were amazed by it as well. And I was saying to myself, well, what if we could teach a 5-year-old how to take notes and explain what they learnt from their notes before they can even read and write? Could I do that? And so we developed this doodle mapping technique for even children who can't read or write. And so we get them to listen to a short story for 5 minutes. They doodle in a certain technique, and then they point through their doodles and they retell the story. And a lot of parents with kids who are dyslexic are like, my kid has reading comprehension. They can read. They spent like £2,000 on Barton or an Orton Gillingham or whatever. They can read. But if you look at each one of these programs, which are brilliant, by the way, they do say there's a limit. You know, we'll teach your child how to decode and read, but we don't teach them comprehension. That's another skill. And it comes from wisdom and understanding, because what the parents found was their child could read a whole story, and at the end of it, you'd say, what was that story about? And they would say, oh, there was a king and there was a sword. I can't remember anything else, you know? But if they did the doodles they could say, oh, there was this king and there was this Damocles guy, and then he had to sit on a chair and he got all this food, and then there was a sword hanging above him and it was on a thread, and then he was scared, and it was all about how you don't want to be like a king because they could have a sword drop on their head and it's actually okay to just be an ordinary person because sometimes that's better. And the parents going, oh my goodness, my child comprehends the story and can retell it, you know, all from about 5 minutes of doodling. And so basically when you ask me what age range we do, so what we've done is we started with the entrepreneur, we went down to the 14-year-old, down to the 8-year-old, down to the 5-year-old, and have gone back up to the entrepreneur with dyslexia at work. And so yes, all ranges. So in Bullet Map Academy, we've got like 100 students, and some of them are doctors, some of them are professors in medical school with dyslexia. Others of them are 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds and everyone in between.
That is ridiculous. I love that. So can you give just a brief overview, you know, without giving away all the secrets, of what Bullet Map Academy does, and what is the theory behind how you provide that support?
Well, first of all, there's no secrets, okay? There's no secrets. I'll tell you everything. I want to tell you everything. I want to tell everyone everything. We're standing on the shoulder of giants here. You know, I've not kind of, you know, so what we've done is I've gone and over the years looked at the students and decided, just figured out what they need. And basically what they need is a combination of capturing their random ideas as bullet points, which is kind of taking a Cornell system approach to capturing information, and then combining it with a mind mapping approach, and then with 7 executive functioning techniques built into it, all onto a 1-page sheet of A4 paper, legal paper, with pen and coloring in pens. You need no technology, nothing. A child can do it whether they're 5 years old or they're 55 years old. They can organize their thoughts all on 1 page. And that's so important for children with working memory difficulties, executive functioning difficulties, processing difficulties, auditory processing difficulties, phonological processing difficulties. Basically, we've found lots of little techniques that the best people with dyslexia tutors do across different disciplines and put it into the 1 page. Okay. So I'm kind of sitting on the shoulder of giants here. You know, this is each one of these techniques, you can go back to research on what that one technique is there for. Okay. So I'll just give you a quick verbal description of what happens, and I'll give you an example, okay? So it's useful to get practical. So one of the biggest difficulties we've noticed is children with dyslexia often find it hard to write a story. They're really great storytellers. They're really great imagination. But when it comes to crunch and someone says, that's a fantastic story, Billy, could you just write it down on 1 page so I've got it? And Billy's like, oh, no. And the first time he tries and it goes on and on forever and never finishes. Then the second time he learns, or the third time he learns, he says, look, I'll just write it in 2 or 3 sentences because this is never going to end. And then the next time you ask him, he says, no, I'll just tell you the story. Okay. And so we've got a lot of 13-year-olds who have never written any story in their life. Okay. Now, if you have got a child with dyslexia, you'll go, well, of course. And if you don't have a child with dyslexia and they're a typical learner, you'll go, oh my goodness, really? And so that's the difference. You know, you go, of course, children with dyslexia resist writing down stories, and they've maybe only written 1 or 2 in their life properly. But they probably will have a secret journal somewhere of a never-ending story in their imagination that they're never finishing. Okay. So you've got this dilemma where hugely creative, but they've not got the executive functioning skills to actually get that story down into a written piece of paper. Now, every single person is going to have to write a structured creative writing story at some point in their high school to get their grade. And if they don't pass that, they will not pass English and they will fail out on that. Guaranteed. And that will be a minimum requirement for any future jobs. If they want to become a paramedic or if they want to become a vet nurse or something like that, and they find their thing and they say, do you have English or whatever? Oh, no, sorry, I don't have that yet, but I'm really good at my job. And they're like, really, sorry, you've got to have that as a basic. So we deal with that straight up, front and center, because it's an utter monster of a problem for kids with dyslexia. To me, what it feels like is when I see these kids walking up to that little, just write me a little paragraph or a story. For them, it's like approaching a doorway in a wall, and there's this monster chained to the doorway on a leash, and it's barking and yapping at them. And the closer they get, it's growling and wanting to attack them. It doesn't hurt them because it's on the leash, but there's no way they can get through that door. They try everything they can to sneak past it and distract it or whatever. But there comes a point when that doorway's not wide enough to sneak by it. Normally, when they're like 12 years old, you've got to write this story tough. You've got to do it now. And it takes hours and hours and hours. And they try everything they can to kill this monster. But what we say to the kids is, don't try and kill the monster. Feed the monster and tame it. Every story monster wants five things in the story. And once you feed them those five things, the story monster calms down and becomes like a little puppy that is like your friend and is actually really kind. And all it is it's hungry, okay? So I want to show you how to feed this story monster. Would you like that? Because I've done it already, and I want to show, I've come back to show you how to do it. And they're like, okay, I don't believe you, but I would quite like to get past this story monster. But they don't believe me, okay? Right. Because I've said the E word, the essay word. It's like a swear word in dyslexia circles, the E word, essay. And so here's what we do. You want to hear what we do?
Oh, please.
Yes. Yeah.
So take a sheet of paper.
I want to feed the monster.
Let's feed the monster, okay? We take a sheet of paper. On the left-hand side, we write down all the random ideas that they've got in a bullet point list. And it doesn't matter what order they come in. Don't worry about it. Then we underline a few keywords. Then we draw something in the center of the page called the story star, okay? And it's just a little five-pointed star. And on the tops of the star, it's like a starfish, five branches, okay? The top star has a face, the next branch has an eye, the next branch has a foot, then there's a hand, and then there's a crown. Because in a story, the face represents the characters, the eye represents what the main character has their eye on, what the main character really wants. So they might want to become rich, okay? Or let's say popular. They want to become famous and loved, okay? Then the foot is the baddie who comes along and trips them up and stops them becoming popular or famous or loved. And then the hand is the person who stretches out a hand, normally some wise figure or a kind figure or a guide of some sort that gives them a magic wand or a magic spell or some training or a karate kid training or something like that. And then they get to the crown, which is what they had their eye on, and they get what they wanted. And that's when you know you've got the end to your story, because often children with dyslexia write never-ending stories because they don't know what an ending actually is. So you've got to set yourself up for an ending by having the right structure. So in teaching language, this is a scaffold, okay? This is a visual scaffold, okay? So then we take all their random ideas and we just place them visually in the relevant parts on the branch, okay? And then it starts to bring structure to their random thoughts. Creative order. Do you see it? Can you imagine it?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Now, the magic is that because it's all on one page, their working memory is not being overly taxed. They're not looking at one page over here, remembering something and flicking it through. Oh, I've got something else over here. And then their working memory falls and drops all the balls and everything floats to the ceiling again. Everything's stuck on one page. Their attention is in one place. Okay? And they don't get stressed out because they know everything is just on that one place. It's okay. You're not going to lose anything. Nothing's going to float away. Then, this is the magic, okay? Because they've emptied their working memory and taken all their ideas and put it into the star, they can see where the gaps are. They can see they've got lots of character. They've got lots of the baddie action. And then you say, so what does the character want? Oh, I don't know. Or maybe, do they want to get rich? Do they want to, you know? And we just did this with a 13-year-old. And he wrote this great treasure hunt story. And basically what the character wanted was to get this treasure of the treasure thieves and take it to the museum because he wanted to preserve history. There's a want that makes the story interesting. Do you get my drift? But without that, it just becomes a never-ending, you know, trips of lots of different things happening, you see? And now you know what that want is, you can start thinking, well, how did he get it in the end? And what was the guide? Who's the guide? What's the thing that really helped him? He's like, oh, I don't know. Oh, there's a wise man and so on anyway. So he figured out this story. So what's happened is there have been two creative moments. The first moment was the brainstorm of the ideas. But because you've gone through an external process, you've actually given yourself headspace to be truly creative on top of what you've done. It's the second iteration of your organization of the story. And that's when the genius of dyslexia, ADHD, and other neurotypical, atypical kind of thinking patterns really comes out and it gets captured. And then once we've done that, there's other techniques in here as well. I can't explain it all in detail here, but I've got a course and so on that I can give to you or access to your listeners for free if you want. People normally pay for it, but happy to, you can go into more detail. But then we get them to talk through the story by pointing to the map. So they're auditory processing the story before they go into words and written word. So at every level, we're trying to use different processing styles to both manually go through what they find hard and use what they're strong at to get them to their destination, which is finally to talk through the map with voice to text and voice to text it out as a document and then go through it and clean it up as the finished piece. And this is laborious the first time. It might take eight 45-minute sessions to systematically go through this process. But once a child has got their own map of this story, what we then teach them to do, and it doesn't stop there, what we then teach them to do is to flash map it. How can you redraw that map from memory without looking at it? And they do a quick doodle of it and they're like, oh my goodness, I can remember it. And we say, let's do it again. And they do it again and they do it three times in a row. It'd take about 4 minutes to do a flash map. At the end of that, we say to them, do you know what? You could go into an English exam, and if they ask you to write a story about an adventure, creative adventure, you can redraw that map from your memory, and you've already got your essay outline that's uniquely yours, ready to write out, and it's organized. Because if you don't realize it as a parent, every single exam is 50% an organization, an exam, and 50% the subject. How are you going to organize the learning that you've got to deliver the product that the examiner is wanting? It's actually hugely about organization, organizing information, organizing your time, all of that. That's really half the marks. And you can literally go into Common Core or Pearson's or whatever, and you can look at the marking rubric, and it's about 42% of marks go simply to how you structured your information and you organized it.
That makes sense.
Brilliant. So do you feel then they have that visual in their I was just thinking, then they have that visual in their mind that they can use in so many different instances and generalize to so many different settings. Once they've learned that visual of that mind map in their mind, they can apply it to so many different things. I think that's brilliant.
Well, and that was going to be my question. Like, you know, do you feel like when you have a student that needs to write a paper for English, that's maybe not a story, but he still has to write a 5-paragraph essay that about a book he read or that has to contain, do you feel like this translates into those kinds of things? He's not necessarily telling the story. He might be analyzing the story, right?
Absolutely.
Or having to write a paper for government class or something like that.
Yes. So once a student has faced down the most terrifying essay monster there is in childhood, which is the creative writing story, because it comes so early and it's the first one you're basically faced with. Then once we've taught them the story star process, the bullet map process, it's called a bullet map because you do a bullet list and then a map, bullet map. Okay. So it's the it's like a Cornell bullet list compared with a mind map. So bullet map. And in the middle of the bullet map, there's this story star. Okay. Now, a story star doesn't need to be always in the middle of a bullet map. You can swap that scaffold out for a different scaffold. For example, if you're doing a descriptive essay and you teachers often give you, here's a picture of this scene. I want you to do a descriptive essay of it. And okay, if you're dyslexic, you're like, right, do you want me to do a descriptive essay from a geological point of view? Or do you want me to do it from an architectural point of view? Or from a sci-fi point of view? Or from a UV light point of view? There's all sorts of different ways of looking and describing what's in that picture. What on earth are you trying to ask me to do here? I have no idea, you know? And they end up saying, well, there's a man and a dog. You know, because, well, what are you asking me? So what we do is like a descriptive window. I've got a scaffold, for example. So we call these little stars in the middle scaffolds. And so you can swap it out for a different scaffold. Like I've got a descriptive window scaffold, which has five branches, but they're very different than the story star. We've got like the persuasive fence. So there's a man sitting on a fence and you have to persuade him to jump one way or another. How are you going to do that? Well, there are five main branches for that. So we use, for example, Aristotle's three different techniques of logic, ethics, and ethos. And we put that into a picture for them. So what's the logical thing to do? What's the emotional, how are you going to appeal to their emotions? And what's the ethical thing to do? And then you've got an introduction and conclusion. There's a few others as well. But that's basically awesome. With a scaffold, it's kind of like, it's really helpful to understand this whole process of learning, like cooking, okay? So cooking has two parts to it. You go get the ingredients and then you cook them together. Now, learning is like going and getting the ingredients, but a test is how you cook them together. Mm-hmm. And a lot of children with dyslexia or ADHD have processing difficulties. And so there's like, what is the process of cooking together everything you've got so it creates a lovely, juicy meal that will make the exam monster happy? And so often that's overlooked or assumed by teachers. They just say, oh, do an essay outline. And you know, some kids have gone 5 years still wondering what on earth an essay outline actually means, because all they have is a random bullet point list of ideas. And they just give up on that and they just say, oh, I'll just start writing. And it ends up being 10 times as long as it should. And then your parents have to edit that blooming essay for a whole weekend. And oh, it's never ending.
You know, what's interesting, what I have found with a lot of the kids, at least in the area where we are, is that they do these processes as a group in class, which sounds really great, right? Like they're going to do the outline together. But I think what ends up happening is the kids aren't really learning. They're just writing stuff down where the teacher says it, but they don't understand why. And I think using this process really gives them the why. Why are these things going in these places? Why in this order? But I think, you know, they end up with an outline in class, but they have no idea why it's organized that way. And I think then they leave class and not with, with no skill on how to write a paper.
Right. Unless they're a bullet map student. Unless they're a bullet map student. Sorry, Abby, for cutting you off there. One of the things that makes me so excited with my students is, so we teach our students how to brainstorm with a bullet map. So there's no story star in the middle. You just write the bullet point list down the side, find some keywords, and make your own kind of pattern of the core ideas, okay? So that's a bullet map brainstorm, okay, which is really very helpful. And some of the kids, when the teacher says, I want you to brainstorm what you remembered from the last geography lesson, okay? Just write it down. I'll give you 3 minutes to recall it, okay? And then they stop and then they say, right, turn to the person, the two or three people at your table and share your ideas with each other to help each other fill in the gaps, okay? What my students do is they brainstorm their ideas, a bullet point list, and they quickly make a little spider map in the middle of the main three or four main ideas, okay? And then they turn to the kids beside them, and the kids share their ideas, some are the same as theirs and some are different. The different ones they add in to their branches, okay? And they fill it out. And then the teacher says, so what did your group discuss? And it's the kid with the map that ends up showing their leadership by saying, oh, we were discussing this, that, the next thing. And they do this beautiful, succinct summary, not a personalized, this is the thing that I really wanted to talk about, but a bird's eye view. And that's a sign of leadership, where you give everyone's idea their proper place. And that's when they start shining, because they're often leaders, you know, they're often people who compile information, gather information, get people together and collaborate and so on, coordinate, see the bigger picture. And once they've got a tool like this, they start shining. And the teacher goes, that was a really great summary, Darius. What did you do that from? Oh, I just did a little map. And she looks at it and she goes, can I take a photo of that for my records? This happens all the time. And they end up teaching the other kids how to organize visually, not with a crappy photocopied visual organizer with boxes all over it that changes every single time. It's got to be a consistent process of thinking that has the space to dynamically change according to the circumstances, but still has continuity so they can develop automaticity, which is one of the biggest problems with children with dyslexia or ADHD, often come.
We lost you there for a second. You're back.
Yeah, you're right. They're taught many skills and they go through the motions of replicating those skills, but they're not understanding, like Lori said earlier, the why, the foundation of why this is an important skill and what this means and how you can apply it to different scenarios. So I think it's brilliant what you're teaching individuals with dyslexia to do. And it can be so helpful to individuals with ADHD too, that struggle with those executive functioning skills, like planning out a task and executing the task and organizing your thoughts in a manner so that you can execute a task. So I think that's great. And it's called Bullet Map Academy, correct?
Yes, yes. I'm not here to promote Bullet Map Academy. I'm really here to promote the principle of dual coding, to be honest, actually. You know, like dual coding is a key principle in education. If you look into the research on dual coding is basically coding information visually and words at the same time. So you've got a fire exit sign and it's got a picture of a person going out the window and it says exit. That's dual coding, you know? Mm-hmm. And dual coding isn't just drawing a general picture of a tree in a forest or whatever. It's about distilling it down into a symbol, an icon, like apps have icons that really distill down the essence. And so when a child is taking notes, if they are dual coding while they're doing their notes, they're doing a doodle that goes along with the idea from the story, they're using both their working memory loops, the verbal loop and the visual loop, the auditory loop and the visual loop in their working memory. So if they've got working memory difficulties, they double up their ability to use their working memory because they're not just leaving their visual one, you know, idle, you know, they're engaging it. And that might be a stronger working memory loop than the auditory one, for example, and the word one, as it were. So dual coding is so important, and actually learning how to take visual notes in an organic way, not just always, there's got to be structure, but it's got to be a flexible enough structure to take visual notes. So I highly recommend mind mapping, proper hand done mind mapping.
Yeah, no, it reminds me of, we talk a lot about multisensory, and I feel like what you're talking about with the dual coding is along those same lines.
We hope that you found that as informative as we did. Be sure to come back for part two of our interview with Darius in our next episode. You're not going to want to miss it. Thanks so much for joining us, and let's talk learning disabilities.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.